These are all of our stories. These are who we are as Americans.
Freedom leads to prosperity. Freedom is the victor.
This is the podcast of Grassroots Radio Colorado with your host, Chris Cook.
And welcome. This is the podcast for Grassroots Radio Colorado. I'm your host, Chris Cook. And today is Monday, August 24th, and I want to get into something. I think I'm going to do a little series of these on our rights. I want to talk about our rights because it's become increasingly clear to me as I cruise around Facebook. I've got an audio that I want to play for you that's just absolutely stupendous, and showing how people just really don't get our rights. They don't understand what they're about. And the audio clip that I want to play you, which is going to sort of sets the tone for this whole conversation today. I want to talk about the Bill of Rights itself, and. The audio I want to play you, the question that this guy asks, his name is Mark Dice. He's a media analyst, and I've since found out, I found this clip over the weekend, but I've since found out that it was played earlier in the month on Fox News. This has gotten a little bit viral. The question that he asks these Hillary supporters is, should we get behind Hillary in her campaign promise to repeal the Bill of Rights, which is a gorgeous question. It's a gorgeous question, first of all, because, of course, she has made no such promise. And the fact that these people just swallow that unthinkingly is hilarious. But the question itself, should we repeal the Bill of Rights, is a little bit more profound than I think either Mr. Dice or the people that he's questioning think about. But let's start with where the country is and where particularly Hillary supporters are. And I'm going to play you this audio.
One of Hillary Clinton's primary campaign promises is to repeal the Bill of Rights to help with the New World Order. Do you think it's time we get behind her and support the repeal?
I think it is. I think we need change like they've been promising us for so many years. I think it's time to get behind Hillary Clinton and do...
support her repeal
and support
the Bill of Rights?
Yes, I really do.
They're just too old.
I think...
200 years
you
old.
You can't have the rules of yesteryear... Now,
those freedoms are just so outdated.
It's so much has changed. So much has changed. People have changed. There's just, we live in a different world now.
We were just checking to see if the Hillary Clinton supporters support the plan to repeal the Bill of Rights.
I support it.
You support it.
I support it.
Okay.
I sure do.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Is that not stunning? That she just mindlessly, because it's her candidate and because she wants hope and change, she just mindlessly wants to throw out the Bill of Rights, mindlessly. But here's the challenging part. Don't we mindlessly support it? A lot of times it's in there. It, you know, to us, it represents, these unbending truths that ought to be protected. And we absolutely have to have a Bill of Rights, and to repeal it would be a horror of horrors. And I'm not sure that that's not a correct statement now, but I want to think. Let's kind of do a thought experiment. Let's think back to when the Constitution was ratified, and the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist arguments that were going on before the full ratification had been completed. And of course, we've got the Federalist Papers. We've also got the Anti-Federalist Papers. Federalist Papers were written by Hamilton, Madison, and Jay, primarily, and so. We're looking at, in the Federalist argument, the people who wanted to ratify the Constitution as it was, we're looking at, of course, a strong federal government. Hamilton was an advocate for a strong federal centralized government. He's been accused of being a monarchist. I tend to not believe that because I've listened to Dr. Tom Krannewitter on the subject, and I think that Hamilton was a brilliant political mind and did what he could, did everything that he could in order to get the Constitution passed, and that included appearing as if he was a monarchist and arguing for the monarchy so that folks would run the other way and take up the Constitution. But the Federalists did not want to include a Bill of Rights, and that was a big point of contention with, and it would have made, if they hadn't exceeded on this, if they hadn't said okay on this, we likely would not have had the Constitution ratified in the first place. So that all that context is worth keeping in mind. Now, Hamilton addresses this in Federalist 86. Let me make sure I got my numbers right. Federalist 84 in the Federalist Papers. And there's a couple pieces of this. And the reason why this actually jumps out at me. Now, let me explain where my position is. I am, in general, a siding with the anti-federalists. In general, I side with their arguments. I am for a much more distributed government. I like the idea that the states are more powerful than the feds. I like the idea of subsidiarity, where the government that is closest to the people is the best government. And so for those reasons, I'm not at all an advocate of a strong central government. But I also do understand the Constitution as being from the people and granting only certain powers to the government. And so, well, let me read you from Hamilton, because he makes a much better argument than I'm going to be able to stumble through here. He says, it has been several times truly remarked that bills of rights are, in their origin, stipulations between kings and their subjects, abridgments of prerogative in favor of privilege, reservations of rights not surrendered to the prince. And so what he's talking about here, let's unpack this a little bit. He's talking about things like the Magna Carta. There were the Declaration of Right presented by the Lords and Commons to the Prince of Orange in 1688. Things like that, where the tyrant was made to give up some of his prerogative so that the people could enjoy more freedom. That was the context in which those bills of rights came forward, in particularly in English law. And so that was the context in which we were functioning, that, you know, that was the thought process, that was where you know, these folks had come from, what they had observed. Their knowledge of law came from English law, and they wanted to have those, the anti-federalists in particular, wanted to have those protections so that the tyrant wouldn't come in and retake his prerogative. Divine right of kings, the king had all the power, and the people only had the, in that form of government, the people only had the powers that the king granted to them. Our government was different. Our proposed constitution at that time was very, very different. I mean, think about the founding words. We, the people of the United States, to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. So in other words, us coming together as a society so that we may continue to live free, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That's, of course, the preamble to the Constitution. We all know the words. Let's think about them for a second. We the people. We the people. The Constitution is us, the people, granting to our government the ability to do certain things that we deem it should be doing to, in order to secure liberty for us and for our kids. That's what the Constitution, that's what the preamble is talking about, and it sets the tone for the rest of the document. The rest of the document lays out what the government, the only powers that the government can do, the enumerated powers. It lays out all that stuff. And so the argument that Hamilton advances is that if we then start defining rights, we're in trouble. And he says it like this, and I thought this was great. I go further and affirm that bills of rights, in the sense and to the extent in which they are contended for, are not only unnecessary in the proposed Constitution, again, because the Constitution was simply granting certain powers to the government, enumerated powers, are not only unnecessary in the proposed Constitution, but would even be dangerous. They would contain various exceptions to powers not granted, and on this very account would afford a colorable pretext to claim more than were granted. Gee, do you think that's happened? Do you think maybe that's happened? And so the thought experiment that I want you to go into here for a second. Let's think about this. What would our country look like today if we didn't have a Bill of Rights? What would our country look like today if we didn't have a Bill of Rights that insinuated to the feds, and more particularly insinuated to the courts, that there was more power there than was actually enumerated within the Constitution itself? And I have embarked on this thought experiment a number of times over the course of the past few years, and I really, really begin to wonder if our country would not look very, very different if, instead of basically implying that the government had more power than it did, and that's why we had to reserve these 10, instead of making that implication, it was instead exceedingly clear that the only things that our federal government could do were the things that the Constitution laid out it could do. I really wonder. And see, you know, part of the problem here is that, like with the 17th Amendment, which of course is not part of the Bill of Rights, but with the 17th Amendment, we gave up more power to the federal government by our senators no longer being elected by state legislatures, now elected popularly. And so the states have that balance of power. You always got to think about that balance. That balance of power has been completely interrupted. And I think that there's been violence done to all of our freedoms because of that, and because of this implication of the government having more power than it actually does. So I wonder, I really do wonder, what would our country look like if we did not have a Bill of Rights? Now, there are plenty who would argue at this point that if we didn't have it, that all of our liberties would have been relegated to the ash heap of history. And there's not, that's not a bad argument. It's really not. The fact that we had to have a Bill of Rights proposed and adopted in order to secure the ratification of the Constitution, well, you know, I mean, it's an argument in favor of expedience, and at some times you have to make those concessions in order to get the, for want of a better phrase, the greater good through. The Constitution obviously is a very strong document. It's being chipped away at by progressives who are continually trying to seek ways around its provisions and its enumerated powers and trying to expand those powers. And would they have expanded into these areas? Would they have expanded into regulating the press? Would they have expanded into, you know, unwarranted searches? Well, wait a second. They already have. And because we do have the Fourth Amendment, we have at least a tool to push back. Not effectively so far, but we're working on it. We at least have a tool to push back. But what would it look like if it had been for this entire time, since the ratification of the Constitution, for this entire time, it had been made exceedingly clear that the government could only do those things that the Constitution told it it could do? I really, really begin to wonder. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit about how we educate people on this thought process and get people thinking a little bit about this, because I think it illuminates one of the fundamental dangers to our republic, and that is the idea that our rights come from our government and not the government's powers come from us. Making that distinction in people's minds is, I think, a really important distinction, and being able to educate folks on that is something that each of us can do. We can start these conversations. We can get folks thinking about it, and maybe they'll start to understand what it is, the true legacy of our founding document, the true legacy of that has been passed down to us as citizens, both the responsibility and the privilege of having that power that we grant to the Constitution, or grant to our federal government. So we'll talk about that a little bit when we come back. That is Jason Shaw playing us some acoustic blues. You can find that at freemusicarchive.org. Like that song. So we're talking about the Bill of Rights. And this can be a really profound question. And then we started off with an audio clip of Hillary supporters wanting the repeal of the Bill of Rights. And if you think more deeply into the question and you have an understanding of the history and the Federalist versus Anti-Federalist arguments and an understanding of what has happened to our rights over the course of the years, because there is this implication that we reserve this right, but the government gets everything else, which is in part what has happened. I mean, let's think for a second about, like, for example, the Fourth Amendment against warrantless searches. We have now the argument that we have to make that surveilling our phones and our text messages and Facebook and these other things that have an expectation of privacy are indeed not, or that those are indeed warrantless searches. We have to make that argument in the courts so that the courts will uphold our right to privacy. That is what happens, is that you have to prove that right applies in this situation. And with changing technology, of course, these become more and more obscure. You have, for example, let's look at the right to a free press. You know, do you have a right to a free press, as it says in the First Amendment, is radio and media, new media press, is television press. You know, does that all count in that? Let's look at the freedom of religion. That is granted to individuals, right? And so do businesses have a right to free exercise of religion? Sorry, I'm stumbling over my words today. But, this is the problem. This is the problem, is that you have to argue that the government does indeed have a right to, or does indeed not have a right to regulate something that it says it has a right to do. And you have to prove that you have the right. It's sort of a guilty until proven innocent concept. And I really think that when you wrap your brain around this, this is kind of the key to this whole idea of America, this whole idea of what we were founded on, this idea that we, the people, are the ones with the power, and we are giving the government some of that power so that we can live free. Now, the anarchists out there are going, and it didn't work, so that's why we need to abolish the government. I get that. You know, I do get that argument, and I understand what it is that you are saying. I believe that we are more free if we can delegate some of that power in order to protect our individual rights, so that we are not individually having to protect our individual rights. That's a vigilante, in my mind, that's a vigilante society. If somebody can prove to me differently, I'd be happy to listen to the argument. But that is, for me, it's a Republican form of government. It's a republic. And that is the way that I believe we can be most free. And that is what our founders set up. And then they added this piece on, because it wouldn't have been ratified otherwise, because folks were nervous about tyrants coming to power, obviously, and exceeding the powers that were granted within the Constitution. And so they wanted to preserve these specific rights. And that is what happened. But where would we be? Where would we be if we had not implied that the government had greater power than it does now, than it actually does, according to the Constitution itself? Where would we be? Would we not be in a better place? Would we not have a different mindset about our relationship with our government? I think a lot of people out there don't even question the idea that the government grants us our rights. It never occurs to them to question that idea, which I think is shameful. It's a shameful lack of education within civics and history courses in our high schools. But moreover, it's a denigration of who we are as Americans to believe that our rights, our natural rights, which come from God, our natural rights are granted to us by the government. And the government then, when that's the situation, when that's the mindset, the government has the power to take away those rights. If you believe that the government grants you those rights, then it's a privilege for you to be able to own a gun. It's a privilege for you to be able to speak freely. And those rights can be suspended at any time, on any whim, by anyone who is in power. That is the danger. And that is one of the dangers that's facing us right now today. And we've seen it with Jack Phillips and Masterpiece Bakery and the exercise of freedom of religion. The government should not have a right to come in and tell you that you cannot discriminate on the basis of your religious views, that you cannot refuse to serve someone on the basis of your own religious views. That is not one of the powers of the government that was granted in the Constitution, for them to be able to come in and tell you who you have to serve and who you can't and who you can't serve. That's not one of the powers of the federal government. And yet, that is how it has turned out. In this age of PC, they have applied a power that they don't have because they were in the position of having Jack Phillips prove to them that he had a right to free exercise of religion. And he lost on that. He lost on that. So that is exactly where we're at now. Second Amendment, our gun rights. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed has been manipulated up and down and sideways, in large part because of that first explicatory clause that says, because of a regulated militia. So we've had so many problems because of the way that these things were put together. And it's not that the founders did a bad job of it. I don't want to denigrate Madison at all. He really, given what he had without the benefit of so many years of hindsight and how it was going to be abused, he did the best that he could. And those 10 amendments were ratified. So our founding fathers, I think, did the best that they could without the benefit of having, you know, a Monday morning quarterback like me going, ooh, that didn't work out so well. But and the fact remains that without the Bill of Rights, we would not have ratified the Constitution at all. So I want to go back in time and take up the Federalist banner against the Anti-Federalists on this issue and see if we could not have a Bill of Rights, because I think that sitting here in 2015, our country would be better off. We would be better off. There would not be this implied grant of power, and which is exactly what Hamilton warned us against. It's an implied grant of power. If we could help people understand what the balance of power truly is supposed to be in this country, I think that we would take a long way towards restoring the republic, saving the republic, because once people understand that they are the ones with the power, then they understand that they are the ones who can take it back. And that is the basis for restoring the republic. Understanding that you do have that power. Yes, it goes back to being an ideologue and being an idealist. Understanding what the right thing is. The right thing is the powers as they were granted in the Constitution, nothing more. That's the right thing. And then an idealist, have the faith that it can happen. Our founders had that faith. They had that faith and they made it happen. And for the first 150 years of this country, it flourished just fine. It did great. And then the progressives came in. In the early part of the 20th century, and the European influence, and the Hegelian dynasty, and this idea, this nefarious idea that human society and humans themselves could be made better if we just tweak them a little. And of course, the people who are doing the tweaking are the ones who hold the reins of government power. That is the start of our downfall. It was Woodrow Wilson and that. And that idea has invaded all of American society. All of us have been victim of that to one degree or another, and in many parts, large degrees. The whole entire political correctness movement, which is just censorship, That all started with, we can make people think better. We can help them think better, and then we will have a better society. We can help them think the right things, and then we'll have a better society. And it's that invasion of our rights. It's that invasion of our conscience and our consciousness, our national consciousness, that has really eroded so much of our desire to keep that power. So much of that thought that went into the Constitution when it was originally written, when it was originally ratified, when it was originally lived in this country, that spirit has declined in many ways, I think, because of this idea that we can make society better. And so we're going to hand over the reins of power to those who know better than us. This is the national consciousness. We're going to hand over the reins of power to those who know better than us so that we can live in a better society. It doesn't work. We've proven it doesn't work. Over the past 100 years, we have absolutely 100% proven it doesn't work. That's what happens in communist countries as well. That's how it functions when you have a totalitarian society that says, I know better how you should live your life than you do. I know you shouldn't be drinking anything larger than a 16-ounce of soda. I know you shouldn't be smoking anywhere. I know that you should save the earth, and so we're going to help you, and I'm using air quotes there, we're going to help you save energy because that's, you know, a bad thing. I'm going to help you live your life better because I know better than you do. And it's a result of this idea that we can just tweak people to make them better. You know what? People were great all on their own. People really were great all on their own. We do not have a better society living under government rule. We do not have a better time of it when we're told what we can think, who we have to serve, what we can say, who we have to be careful not to offend. We have a better society when we are free. And that freedom only comes when we reserve the power over our society to ourselves and only grant those things to the government that are necessary in order to secure our rights, not imply that they have greater rights than they actually have. So Mark Dice's question at the top of this podcast, I thought was very profound, unknowing to all the participants in that audio. I think it's a very profound question. Should we repeal the Bill of Rights? I don't think it's something that any of our presidential candidates are going to run on. I mean, that's definitely not going to be a campaign promise. And again, I'm not sure that we could get away with repealing it at this point because that implied grant of power is already out there. If we could roll that back somehow, and how that would happen, I have no idea. But if we could roll back that implied grant of power, then maybe repealing the Bill of Rights would be a good idea. But at the beginning, this is one of the things that maybe we shouldn't have done as a country, and maybe we shouldn't have pursued that path, because look what's happened. I hope you've enjoyed this. Come find me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/grassrootsradiocolorado. You can also email me, Chris, K-R-I-S, at grassrootsradiocolorado.com. And tomorrow we'll explore a little bit more of the Bill of Rights and our rights as they exist. Thank you so much for joining me. I am Chris Cook. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.